call the meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs to order. Today is Tuesday, March 28th, 2017. It is 3:38 in the Tom Stewart Building in the Belts Room. And today we have President Senators Gardner, Senator McKinnon, Senator Stedman, Senators Hoffman, and myself, Senator Bishop. We have a full complement. We'd like to recognize our Senate Records Clerk, Ms. Ann Kruckelberg, and Kyle Schramm on the teleconference network, John Manley from my office. We know the cell phone drill. And today we have three bills to take up. One, first up is HB 8 by Representative Edgman, HB 7 by Representative Ortiz, and SJR 4 by Senator Olson. So the last time we heard HB 8, Senator McKinnon had an amendment. And Senator McKinnon, would you like to move your amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to object for purposes of discussion, and all committee members should have that amendment in their package. And with that, we're going to ask Ms. Hutchison to come up and present the amendment. And we have Nancy Mead from the Department of Law here as well that would like to testify on the amendment. Please put yourself on the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Brittany Hutchison, staff to Senator McKinnon. Before you is Amendment 1 and its accompanying legal opinion. The amendment before you would put Alaska in further compliance with the Federal Violence Against Women's Act. It will require that all protective orders, restraining orders, or injunctions in a case involving domestic violence, sexual assault, or stalking shall not be published on the Internet if they would likely reveal the identity or location of the party protected under the order. Mr. Chair, if you take a look at the amendment, we're looking at the bulk of the amendment to Section 2. Everything else is conforming change. And the reason that we wrote Section 2 the way it is because also, Mr. Chair, if you look in your packet, you will see Title 18 of the United States Code annotated Section 2265. On the second page, you'll see Section D2, which is what HB 8 is seeking to be in compliance with, which is entitled No Prior Registration or Filing as a Prerequisite for Enforcement. However, right below that, D3 is what our amendment is seeking to be in compliance with. It's titled Limits on Internet Publication of Registration Information. Our amendment is worded the exact same way that it is worded in here. If you look down about four lines, it says, if such publication would be likely to publicly reveal the identity or location of the party protected under such order. So, Mr. Chair, this amendment is simply seeking to protect the victim and to further our state's compliance with the Violence Against Women's Act.
Okay. Any questions from committee members for the maker of the amendment? Seeing none, Department of Law, you want to have a comment you'd like to come up and put on the record, please?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, and for the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. And I did want to just put on the record that the result of this language, I just want the committee to be clear, would mean that the court system would remove from CourtView, the public version of CourtView that people can access from home, the one you're used to looking at, all records of domestic violence protective orders as well as stalking and sexual assault protective orders. The reason that this would remove all records of those protective orders is that any record of the protective order would likely reveal the identity or location of a party protected. I think there was some thinking that this would cause the court system to remove just petitioner's names, that is the person who brings the request for a civil protective order. But the way we would interpret this is that we would need to remove everything. And the reason for that is because if you leave on court view something like unpublished or anonymous versus Click Bishop with a Fairbanks case number, that does indeed reveal the identity of the person bringing it, and it reveals the location. And therefore, with this wording, we would remove everything. Now, I do want to make clear the court system can do that. We can do that with no fiscal impact. We can remove petitioners' names, and we can do that with no fiscal impact. I just did not want there to be misunderstanding about what our implementation would be of the wording in this amendment. And that would be your choice. We are neutral as to what action you want us to take, but I did want to make that clear.
Thank you. Looks like we have a question, Ms. Mead. Senator McKenna?
Certainly. What wording would you choose, Ms. Mead, so that we could be in compliant with a federal statute, protect victims' identity? So if you have other language that would instruct the court adequately, this language does not tell you to remove everything. It says to protect the victim.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, the problem is, as in the example I gave, that by saying remove anything that reveals the identity or location of the person who files, as I mentioned in that example, it's very easy to tell the identity and location of somebody who files if you leave up one name. You could instruct the court system to remove all petitioners' names, and that's what we would do. But with this wording, because of what would be on there would end up revealing those, we would be violating your statute if we didn't remove the full name. And through the chair, one follow-up to that is the way that the court system has in the past implemented that provision of VAWA is we previously read that as applying to the foreign, that is non-Alaskan domestic violence protective orders. Because of the way that this is placed in the Violence Against Women Act. That's how we interpreted it. And to implement that interpretation, we do not post anything about protective orders that come from other jurisdictions. We have a rule saying those cannot be posted, and we don't post them. And that was our implementation. Now, clearly, the legislature can tell the court to do more if the view is that VAWA requires more, and we will do it. But I just wanted to ensure that you knew how we would implement it.
Ms. Mead?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Mead, so we protect out-of-state orders more vigorously than we protect in-state orders in compliance issues.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, that provision of the Violence Against Women Act, as I say, it appears in the provision of the act that deals with full faith and credit to be given to foreign protective orders. As a result, we read that and thought, okay, foreign protective orders must not reveal anything about the person, and we therefore do not post anything about the person. We can do the same thing for Alaskan protective orders and do not post anything about them. And that's, again, what this language would tell us to do.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we have victims that petition the court for protection that we're trying to come into compliance with federally. And the bill before us tries to take us one step closer. The amendment before us is trying to take us into full compliance. And the courts are asserting today that there's only one way to do that, and that's remove all data. We have been speaking with the courts, and today, I believe, is the first time we've heard that we could use reuse the language and use petitioner. So I'm happy to sit back and listen to others. We have contacted the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, as well as the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And all of our inclination to this date is to have the perpetrator or the person accused have their names out there so that the general public knows that there could be harm associated with those individuals that are being at least accused and not prosecuted. So I will sit back and listen. If this amendment fails, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be able to go back with the courts and craft new legislation that would be in compliant by using the word petitioners as we heard today.
Thank you. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So hearing the concern here described by my colleague, do you have a proposal to fix it and accomplish what she's looking for without the unintended consequence?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, and I did work with the staff of Senator McKinnon's office, it would be simple if the statute said that the court system may not publish a petitioner's name in a domestic violence or stalking or sexual assault protective order. And again, we can do that. And that would be easy to accomplish and perhaps would get to where you want to go. If what you want is to keep petitioners' names off the internet but to leave respondents' names, again, we can do that, and that is not difficult to draft at all.
Thank you.
Brief it is.
Brief it is. Back on the record, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Chairman Bishop. My staff did have the language petitioner, and when we submitted that language to Legislative Legal, we were given a legal opinion that said we would not be in compliance. So if we could ask Megan Wallace, if she's online, to speak to the reasons why she believes that then we would still be out of compliance.
Megan, did you hear the question from Senator McKinnon?
Yes, through the chair. Senator McKinnon, for the record, Megan Wallace, Legislative Legal. With regard to changing the amendments so that only the petitioner's name would appear on CourtView, my concern was is that the federal statute states that to be in compliance that the publication cannot reveal the identity or the location of the party. And I was not certain if you only publish, or excuse me, that if you take out the language relating to revealing the identity or location of the party, it leaves room for noncompliance with that federal law.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Wallace. Mr. Chairman, if we could hear from Ms. Mead. I'm not an attorney. We have different opinions. My goal is to be compliant with the federal law and protect victims of domestic violence.
And through the chair, Senator McKinnon, absolutely, and I don't think my legal opinion on this matters, frankly. I think that if your legal conclusion is that just writing petitioners would not be compliant with federal law, then you would go with this wording. But with this wording, and perhaps Ms. Wallace is saying that, it would mean that we wouldn't post anything about the case on our internet site. And I will say that in trying to see what other states do under VAWA, it is actually difficult to research and find that out definitively, but I don't know if other states post anything about domestic violence protective orders on the internet. I have one Michigan Supreme Court opinion that shows, at least implies, that nothing under, because of VAWA, nothing can be posted on the internet with domestic violence protective orders. I'm not saying that that is the standard in the United States. There are differing states and different court systems that post different types of things on the internet. My legal opinion isn't what I'm proffering. All I'm saying is how we would implement the wording in the statute should this amendment pass.
Follow-up. Senator Gardner had a question, then followed by Senator Stedman. You're fine? Okay, Senator Stedman.
Chairman, I guess I've dealt with a lot of things over the last several years in this building, but this is about as clear as mud. It's kind of a sensitive issue, dealing with domestic violence. We have more than we'd like on our islands in Southeast. So I'd like us to proceed with due caution so we really understand what we're voting on. So apparently there's we can't by federal law publish the names, is that correct, of the accused or whatever perpetrators? Or
through the chair, Senator Stedman, it is Legal's conclusion that the portion of federal law that says that petitioners' names ought to be protected in protective order proceedings that the court previously interpreted only to apply to orders that come in from other states. Ledge Legal has determined that that, in fact, applies to all protective orders filed in the state. That's fine. I'm not disputing that or getting into a legal argument about which is right and wrong. And now the question is how to write that into an amendment. You could write, never put a petitioner's name on court view, and we can do that. Ledge Legal thinks that that wouldn't go far enough to put the state into compliance with federal law. The wording of the federal laws can't put anything on there that would reveal the identity or location. And that is the wording in Senator McKinnon's amendment. And understandably, that would fully implement the federal law to the broadest degree. However, what that means, because of the way court view is set up and what shows, is that we couldn't show anything. Because again, if you have anonymous versus Click Bishop, a domestic violence case in Fairbanks, that reveals the identity of the filer and the location of the filer. And because of that, we would remove, with this wording, we would remove anything. And again, we're neutral. We can do whatever you tell us, but that's what that says to the court system.
Thank you for those comments. If I don't have any more comments from my colleagues, my plan is, if it's as clear as mud to Senator Stubbs, it's a little foggier for myself right now because we've got different opinions. So I'm going to set this bill aside till next week. We're going to move on to the next bill.
Thank you.
And that would be Representative Ortiz and, excuse me, I lied to you. I lied right to you. It's Senator Olson and Jackie Boyer up, excuse me, my mistake. And then we're going to talk about race classics. All right. So if Senator Olson, and I see that he is in the room, we're going to talk about the exemption for legally acquired ivory, and Senator Olson and Jackie Boyer of his staff will be here to present the resolution, and then we're going to open that up for public testimony. So welcome, Senator Olson. It's a pleasure to see you and your staff, and put your name on the record and present.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing this resolution this afternoon. This resolution is designed to do two things. Number one is to show our support to that Alaskans have for products made here in the state of Alaska by ivory, as well as to urge our federal delegation to provide for exemptions for legally obtained ivory here in the United States. The need for this resolution came to my attention by my constituents, which I represent from Kaktovik, which is at the eastern border of Canada, as well as going on down to Diomede and then down to Hooper Bay. Those constituents, especially during the AFN, had told me that they were very concerned about what was going on with the ban on ivory that was happening there, with a lot of poaching that was happening with the elephant ivory. And since our unemployment rate is so high out in western Alaska, besides food, the byproducts of ivory are some of those necessary incomes that takes the edge off of being able to live out there. Without this ability to go ahead and make ends meet, it could be disastrous for them to go ahead and make a living. That aside, I just want to show that I would like to be able to wear my ivory jewelry and not be banned for it across the state. And with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to show you some items that come from my district out in western Alaska.
Please proceed.
This is a baleen basket that was made out there. It has an ivory top made out of fossilized ivory. This is actually narwhal, which was it's not necessarily common over here because it mostly comes over from Canada and Greenland, but there was one that drifted up on near the Kaktovik area, and the other one has to do with some mastodon ivory that was made by the former mayor of the Northwest Arctic Borough, Ross Schaefer. And this is what I see is so important and why I was asked to go ahead and readily avail myself to go ahead and put forth this resolution. With that, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'll have my staffer Jackie Boyer present the meat of the resolution.
Senator Senator Hoffman, Thank you.
Those demonstrations as gifts to the committee?
Thank you very much for that question. I was going to offer that to you, but I didn't have my music isn't as big. I mean, the one I have in my office isn't as big as what you have in your office.
Okay, gentlemen. Jackie, would you please take over before I lose control of the meeting?
Gone. Good afternoon, Chair Bishop and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jackie Boyer, staff to Senator Olson. And if it pleases the chair, I would go through the states that have banned ivory.
Sure, please.
All right. So in New York, they defined ivory as it pertains to elephant and mammoth, even though it's extinct. Section 2 of the statutes prohibit selling, offering to sell, purchase, trade, barter, or distribute any ivory or rhinoceros horn. And then they provide for some exceptions if you apply for a license or permit, so long as it's an antique for educational or scientific purposes, an estate or a musical instrument, and then some of the fines associated with possessing ivory include up to a minimum of a $500 fine, up to a Class D felony with a $25,000 fine. In California, they prohibit purchasing, selling, offering to sell, possessing with intent to sell, or importing ivory. And then so in their definitions of ivory, they include elephant, hippopotamus, mammoth, mastodon, walrus, warthog, whale, and narwhal. You know, and then in California, they also include, you know, exemptions, you know, with permits, so long, you know, as it's an instrument or for educational purposes. And then this one also has fines from $1,000 up to $50,000. In Hawaii, you know, they also prohibit selling, offering to sell, purchasing, trading, possessing with intent to sell, bartering ivory, and, you know, in this one they include whale and walrus, and they also include mammoth. And they did note in their statutes that even though it's extinct, they still want to prevent people from just possessing it. And then what I found was interesting is that in their exceptions, they've included the right of the indigenous people, the Ahapuaha, mm-hmm. To possess and do their traditional practices, much like Alaska, but they don't include, you know, Alaska Native rights to, you know, sell to the people in Hawaii. And then in Jersey, they, you know, they have this similar language, much like the other states. But, you know, what's different about this state, they just blatantly said all ivory, you know, rather than listing endangered species or extinct species. And they didn't provide for any exceptions. And then the most serious offense, you know, after your third time, they just seize all your ivory. And then for Washington, they only ban living elephant ivory, which seems to be the most reasonable.
In Washington State?
Yes.
Okay, so so mastodon ivory is legal in Washington State?
Yes.
Okay.
And then, you know, just relating it to the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is cited in, you know, the resolution. Section 109 relates to transferring of authority from the secretary to the state. So we've interpreted that that it might need some clarification. you know, to maybe preempt states from, you know, kind of arbitrarily banning ivory that's been legally obtained. And then also in section 1539, you know, it specifically states that that the that these provisions listed out, you know, taking of marine mammals aren't applied to any Indian, Aleut, or Eskimo who resides in an Alaska Native village and any non-Native permanent resident of an Alaska Native village. So, I mean, that could be extended to their byproducts for what they do. That was my very quick run.
So, Mr. Chairman, we're now open for questions on this resolution that we feel is very important to the people in western and northern Alaska where legally obtained ivory has been taken by the local population and made into handcrafts or crafted into various items.
Senator, thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Stedman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like the resolution. I think it's good to push back on some of this nonsense that's going on south. But the presently owned ivory in these states that make it illegal, do they have to turn them in, or how do they deal with the stuff that's already in collections and then on grandma's coffee table?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, it varies state by state. For one of the states, you have to report it to Fish and Wildlife Services. For others, it's okay to have as long as it's past older than 1970 something. So, I mean, the point you raise is kind of what we're getting at. You know, it's a little too hard going state by state. Like, you know, if you're an Alaska Native selling an item, I mean, you wouldn't want to get anyone in trouble, and you wouldn't want to get in trouble selling your, you know, your ivory earrings to someone in New York or Washington.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson,
if I could answer some more detail to that question. Most of the people that have in private collections, as well as public collections, have been grandfathered in, and especially if they've been obtained before 1972 when the Marine Mammal Act went into effect, those people are exempted as well. After that, as long as you can keep it, in most states, the general law is that you can keep it as long as you don't try and go and sell it or trade it for or barter for anything else that's there.
Follow up, Senator.
Just a quick follow up to tourists that come through Alaska and buy stuff to take home, like the examples you have on your desk there. Is it illegal for them then to take it into New York, or how do they work it if it's a state that's banned it?
Normally, what happens if the ivory is not raw? It's okay, and been crafted into something, it's okay to go and sell it. As far as I know, it varies state by state, but in general, if you buy it as a craft for the tourist, then you can take it back to the state that you come from, and there it's legal to go ahead and own. In some states, as Ms. Boyer pointed out, you do have to report it to Fish and Wildlife, but I don't have a good tally of what those states are.
Senator Gardner?
Thank you. And you're further resolved on page 2, starting at line 14, it says the Alaska legislature requests the Alaska congressional delegation introduce bills to the Congress to provide for exemption, list the sources from current and future laws. Is it your intention that the exemptions provided would apply to every state, kind of preemptively, or only to federal laws?
Actually, what we'd like to do is for the congressional delegation that we have from the state of Alaska to go ahead and make it so that they are all exempted across the state, and that we don't have the state by state being able to pick and choose as to where people can wear or where people can possess items that are made here in Alaska by the craftsmen that are here, both Native and non-Native.
Thank you.
Okay. There's no other questions. We got people online for public testimony. I'd like to get into those now at this time. Okay. First up online in, I think it's Tualatin, we have Susie. Susie, would you put your name on the record? And you have 2 minutes, please, to testify.
Okay, yes. My name is Susie Silk. I'm originally from Gambell, Alaska. I'm in Puyallup right now, but I will be returning to Washington. And I am a member of Siguluk. We are an artist advocacy group for Alaska Natives against these bans. This began when Denise Wallace notified me on Facebook that Hawaii was banning Wallace Ivy also. And we kept putting on their sites about their laws that were exempted from that under MMPA, and they kept telling us that we would be exempted, but they banned us anyway. Daly Sambo is a member also, and she established contact with Senator Murkowski's office, and I testified at Senator Sullivan's field hearing at the ASN, and I also talked to Don Young in person. So we did reach out to the congressional delegation already. So far, I've reached out again to see what an update is on their progress, because they kept telling us they couldn't do anything until after the election, and then it was they were responding to all these executive orders that were coming out. But Murkowski's office has written to Senator, Governor Brown in California, and asked him to, let the public know that we are exempted from these bans, and they do claim that exemption on their law. They just don't, it's not, it's not made clear that we're exempted. And in their law, they also add polar bear, whalebone, and sea otter products. So even though these items technically are not banned, people think they are. There's a lot of confusion around these bans, so there's a de facto ban going on anyway. And I've reached out to businesses and been told by both businesses and artists that the market is way down, so it is already hurting the market. And in my research, I discovered that this is an overreach by wildlife groups in regards to the elephant ivory ban, which we have nothing against. We are for protecting the elephants. But you don't have to ban all ivory worldwide, which is their wording, basically, virtually eliminate virtually all ivory markets worldwide, and President Obama is with them and is quoted as saying that also. And part of the argument is that it's hard to distinguish between the ivories, and we were able at the last court is involved in this issue, and I've been going to meetings there in the Nome area and working with them along with ICC and EWC. And U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the main guy from Alaska, was there at one of the meetings. And he understood what we were going to do, so he had them draft up a paper on the fact that you can absolutely distinguish between walrus ivory and elephant ivory. So that's out there by U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and that's a very important piece of paper in this whole argument.
You went over your 2 minutes. I've let you go there for a while. Could you please sum up your comments? We've got more people online who want to testify.
Okay. All right. The process for listing animals is corrupted at the CITES level, and that's verified by Eugene LaPointe. He's a former Secretary General of CITES, Cultural Survival, all these groups of these human rights abuses by conservation groups. And in fact, World Wildlife Fund is under investigation right now by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. That's an international organization that usually just investigates international corporations, and World Wildlife Fund is the first conservation group that they're investigating for human rights abuses, including deaths. So, that's another thing that needs to be looked at. But there is a need for a certification system. I've heard that from customers. They're scared to buy because they're scared their things are going to be banned anyway. So there's a definite need for that.
Okay, Susie. Well, thank you for your testimony. I think we got it. And we're going to go on to Nome now and speak to Alice with Kowarik and Nome. Alice, you're on, and try to keep your comments to 2 to 3 minutes, please.
Okay, thank you so much, Honorable Committee Chair and committee members. My name is Alice Bioff, resident of Nome, Alaska, currently employed at COERIC and an Alaska State Council on the Arts Council member. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify in support of the Senate Joint Resolution Number 4. I'm a tribal member of the Native Village of COERIC and grew up here and in Nome. My family and I have lived in Nome for the past 17 years. For much of that time, I've been employed by COERIC, the regional nonprofit consortium of tribes for the Bering Straits region, as a business planning specialist. Through our work here at COERIC, I am honored and privileged to work with artist entrepreneurs within our communities. We provide direct technical assistance, offering tools and resources to assist artists continue their work so that they can sustain themselves, their families, and their communities. Walrus ivory harvested during subsistence hunting is one of the main materials artist entrepreneurs in our region use to carve into unique traditional artwork that has been recognized for its amazing craftsmanship throughout the world. Artist entrepreneurs are economic development drivers in their communities. I see firsthand the economic impact of selling ivory has in our communities, but most importantly, how the arts and crafts keep our traditional practices alive and strong, beautiful work being passed down from one generation to the next. Our art is weaved into who we are as Indigenous people, and having access to the materials to continue that art is vital. I support this resolution. It would be a shame to see our ability to sell ivory collapse because of a lack of understanding of our culture that is unique and special with a history of customary tradition and ability to live with nature and ability to successfully self-manage a resource such as walrus. Please educate those who do not understand this. This resolution is an important step to advocating and protecting the inherent rights of each and every one of our tribal members, our ability to harvest and use the byproducts of the animals we hunt and sustain our families is crucial. Thank you to Senators Olson, Garner, Begich, Stedman, Bishop, and Egan for bringing this resolution forward. And thank you for this opportunity to offer this testimony.
Thank you for your comments up there, Alice, and we appreciate it. Next, we're going to go to Savunga, and we're going to talk. John's up out there in Savunga. So, John, you're up, and you got 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, sir. I would like to have you recognize my name is John Wally, Jr. from Savunga, Alaska. I am a lifelong subsistence provider for my family and community. And as you all know, you have been informed about how important the resource is. I want to reiterate to you that the state of Alaska needs to help educate and advocate for the indigenous community to make sure that our guarantee and survival is protected. St. Lawrence Island people are the only people in the world that harvests walrus first as a subsistence resource first. It helps us to maintain spiritual, physical, and psychological needs that help keep us who we are as an identity on St. Lawrence Island. We are probably per capita the most harvesting people out there in the world for walrus products. The ivory that these people mentioned is used exclusively to help supplement our subsistence way of life. Our artistic values and forms are represented because we have used walrus ivory for thousands of years. And please be mindful that if states are going to localize laws prohibiting walrus ivory artwork, they need to be educated, and the congressmen, representatives need to be thoroughly challenge that they need to educate everybody about the indigenous people in Alaska that utilize this walrus product. Please take that into serious consideration and protect our inherent way of life. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, John. I appreciate it. Next, we're going to go back to Nome, and we're going to talk to, we're going to let Dara Metcalf educate us from the Eskimo Walrus Commission in Nome. Dara, could you put your name on the record and fire away?
Yes. Thank you. Vera Metcalf. I'm the program director for the Eskimo Walrus Commission at Koweric in Nome. I'm actually in Anchorage attending a different conference, but thank you so much. I would like to, you know, I've been the program director for the Walrus Commission in 2002, but actually the Walrus Commission itself has been around since 1978, and I also serve on the Marine Mammal Commission as their special advisor on native affairs. But I just want to mention the increasing difficulties of harvesting and pressure because of climate change, and I'm sure you understand this, living in the Bering Strait, shipping, contaminants, and concerns about the outcome of ESA determination for walrus that make the importance of the economics of harvesting walrus absolutely, really critical. So I'm just wondering, can these communities afford to continue hunting? Of course, that's a fundamental thing that John Wally and others have expressed because, as you know, many of our coastal communities rely on numerous marine mammal resources like walrus for fundamental aspects of life in rural Alaska, from the meat to the blubber, the skin and organs in food, to processing skin and tusks for use in our boats, our drums, our jewelry, and handicrafts. These are critically important to us, but, you know, with ice cover diminishing and changing as it has been the past few years, our hunters are even facing greater challenges in traveling further distances to hunt as they have for hundreds of years. But we have this cultural understanding living in Alaska Native communities. However, we do want people to understand that the walrus defines not only our local economies and our way of life, but our food resources and our cultural traditions, including the arts and crafts that are beautifully made from this resource that is made available to us. But I think the less reliable seasonal harvest of walrus is, you know, continues to be worrisome, and more so to those communities that more heavily depend on walrus for food. But I don't expect or have seen any communities losing their cultural connection to walrus, because marine mammals, including seals, walrus, beluga, bowheads, whales, and the resources they offer to us together hold such a significant place in Alaska Native cultures. Thank you so much for sponsoring this, and thank you to Senator Olson for introducing Senate Joint Resolution Number 4. Please keep us informed, and we'll do what we can to keep this moving. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you, Dara, for your testimony. Greatly appreciated. Seeing no one else online, anyone else in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, testimony is closed. We're going to set this bill aside till next week. And next up, thank you, Senator Olson, and your staff for presenting today. And we're going to take a brief at ease and give them time to change up. Next up, we've got HB 18 Race Classics, presented by Representative Ortiz and Elizabeth Bowling and his staff. And welcome to Community and Regional Affairs, and please put your name on the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dan Ortiz. I represent District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Elizabeth Bowling. I'm employed by Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Chairman Bishop and esteemed committee members, for the opportunity to present to you HB 18, a simple, straightforward race classics bill. And while it is simple and straightforward, it is necessary for the eligibility of the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce to obtain a race classic permit, as the term race classic is so narrowly defined in statute, providing only for the Mountain Marathon Race Classic held by the Seward Chamber of Commerce. The Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce also has an interest in obtaining a race classic permit for a human race, the Race to Alaska, which, Mr. Chairman, is a non-motorized boat race beginning in Port Townsend, Washington, and ending in Ketchikan, Alaska. It is a 750-mile race, and the idea of attaching this to a race classic permit is it would allow the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce to do a little fundraising and provide the opportunity for people to wager, for lack of a better word, wager on the exact day, hour, minute, and second of the arrival of the first place boat. So with that said, Mr. Chairman, I have nothing further to add. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have, and I do know that we also have a few people, I think, online who are available for testimony on this bill.
We do. Do we have questions from committee members or the bill sponsor? Seeing none, we're going to go right on line here, and we're going to go to Bill Swift, Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Swift, put your name on the record and 2 minutes of testimony or thereabouts, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and esteemed committee members. My name is Bill Swift, the Executive Director of the Greater Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce. Testifying to express the Greater Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce's unanimous support for the passage of House Bill 18 regarding race classics. The Chamber of Commerce in Ketchikan is a nonprofit, member-driven community organization dedicated to supporting Ketchikan businesses and the community that we serve. It was 2015 when Ketchikan was surprised to find itself the finish line of an exciting new unpowered boat race, the Race to Alaska, or R2AK. As Senator Ortiz explained, the participants in R2AK make a 750-mile journey from Port Townsend, Washington, to Ketchikan, Alaska, in unpowered vessels. First team to finish wins $10,000, the second team a set of steak knives. Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce is seeking to raise funds for local community projects and to increase the excitement surrounding the R2AK by starting a new community guessing game fundraiser similar to the Nanana Ice Classic. Participants would guess the time the first contestant completes the race, and the person coming closest to the actual time would win a cash prize. The proceeds of this fundraiser would be used by the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce for special activities such as community projects, economic development programs, helping to grow a new scholarship fund, and more. The Chamber is a 501c6 nonprofit community organization made up of more than 270 members, mostly Ketchikan businesses. After conducting a good deal of research, we've determined that a specific legislative authorization is necessary. House Bill 18 gives the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce permission to conduct a charitable community fundraiser of this type based around the Race to Alaska by including this event within the state's existing definition of a race classic. House Bill 18 specifies that this event would be administered by the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce. The tradition of classics is a fun and common form of Alaskana. A great many nonprofit entities throughout Alaska have been given permission by the legislature to conduct classic fundraisers of this type. There are currently race classic dog mushers classics, rain classics, fish derbies, moose derbies, and even goose and canned salmon classics. There is a strong precedent for the Chamber of Commerce organization to host events of this type. Similar events are hosted by the Chamber of Commerce organizations for Juneau, Fairbanks, Kenai, Seward, Petersburg, Delta, and Big Lake. We know that the members of Alaska's legislature have a very challenging set of decisions during this session. We thank you for taking the time to consider our request for what we believe is a relatively small, albeit necessary, administrative change, which does not cost the state anything, but does require legislative approval. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Swift, for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Chelsea Goucher, I think, Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce. I hope I didn't butcher that, but you can correct me here. You got
That is quite all right. Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Chelsea Goucher, and I'm the current Vice President of the Ketchikan Chamber's Board of Directors. I also serve as President of the Board for Southeast Conference, Southeast Alaska's EDA-designated economic development organization. I'm currently employed as an account representative for Alaska Marine Lines, but in the past, I was employed by the Ketchikan Chamber as Executive Director. I held that position for 2 years, and I'm intimately acquainted with the Chamber's activities and its importance to the community of Ketchikan and surrounding areas. I'm sharing this testimony to express my wholehearted support for Representative Ortiz's proposed amendment to House Bill 18 and Act relating to Race Classics. His amendment would allow the Greater Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce to raise money by operating and administering a race classic with their gaming permit, as is currently done by the Seward Chamber with their Mountain Marathon Race Classic. I support in full the letter of support submitted by Bill Swift, current Executive Director of the Ketchikan Chamber, and have just a few points to add concerning the importance to Ketchikan of the monies that might be generated by hosting a race classic such as that provided for in House Bill 18. The Ketchikan Chamber has undertaken a wide variety of special projects in recent years, including but not limited to workforce development initiatives, economic and community development programs, fun community events such as the lighting of the town Christmas tree and the July 4th parade, employee wellness trainings, informational programs, networking events to encourage a vibrant economy, assistance to new and developing businesses, hosting special programs such as the Ketchikan Marine Industry Council, fostering the Ketchikan Young Professionals Network, and advocating for a sound business climate for Ketchikan and the entire state through close work with organizations like Southeast Conference, the Alaska Chamber, the Alaska Forest Association, and the Alaska Miners Association. These activities are self-funded by the Chamber. We rely on very little government money or grants and depend primarily on member dues and fundraisers to function. The Ketchikan Chamber is a diverse, nonpartisan organization and has truly helped to make a difference in our community. House Bill 18 would help us sustain these efforts and our ability to serve the community we serve despite decreases elsewhere in the community in state and local funding. In fact, a race classic would likely attract outside money too, as racers, their family and friends, sports fans, and residents of Port Townsend, the racist community of origin, buy for a chance to win this newest of race classics. Thank you for your time, and please consider adoption of House Bill 18 as amended.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Jason Custer, Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce. Put your name on the record, sir, in 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jason Custer, and I'm a member of the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce Board and was the president last year. I would like to say I agree with Mr. Swift and Ms. Goucher's testimony and incorporate it into my own by means of reference. The Chamber is probably the largest and most diverse nonprofit organization in Ketchikan with 274 members, including individuals, businesses, nonprofits, and local and tribal governments. We're a nonprofit organization which works to promote a healthy and vibrant economy and a livable, sustainable community that families and businesses are proud to call home. The benefits of House Bill 18 to our organization and community would include providing a new source of locally generated, self-generated revenue for community projects which otherwise would not be present. It supports community development and economic development activities and programs. House Bill 18 will help get Alaskans and residents of Ketchikan excited about contributing to community projects and initiatives, promoting a culture of community giving and self-sufficiency. This would not cost the state anything, but it creates a new source of funding for community projects and initiatives. We understand that numerous other Chamber of Commerce organizations around the state have been given the ability to administer similar programs, including in Juneau, Fairbanks, Petersburg, and Seward. We're seeking the same opportunity as them to conduct this type of fundraising within our community. While this may seem a relatively modest request, it is nonetheless very important and meaningful to our community. With state and local government funding decreasing, and with funding for nonprofit and community activities declining every year, every new source of revenue we can self-generate for community projects is extremely important. Therefore, we ask that you please support House Bill 18. Thank you.
All right, Jason, thank you for your testimony. And that is it for off net and in the room. I see none. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not biased on this bill at all.
No.
As a member of the Ketchikan Chamber and senator for the district. I think it's a good idea. I'm glad the rep brought it forward. I think it'll be a good way for the community to generate some money to do a multitude of things that were mentioned earlier, and actually kind of fun to have the non-motorized race starting in Port Townsend and ending in Ketchikan. I think the first one was quite entertaining for the community, and even the papers around Southeast, it was fairly noteworthy. So I think it's a fine bill. I'd just like to note that this is one of the smallest bills I've ever seen. One sentence and a zero fiscal note. So that's, can't get much smaller than one point than that.
Questions from other committee members of the bill sponsor? Seeing no one in the room to testify, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I pulled the statute that we're looking at, games of chance and consent. Games of chance and contest of skills, and it seems that we've created an entire chapter to say okay to gaming one issue at a time, and I'm wondering why, given the current recession that the state is in, and folks trying, nonprofits specifically, trying to work for themselves, why we wouldn't open up the, why we should continue to have one agency, one nonprofit at a time come forward to ask for permission to do something, which requires years of advanced planning, versus trying to open this up a little bit further. Because as I understand it, you still have to comply with the same rules under the gaming, so you still have to notify your municipality, you have to do many other things to make sure that you're the nonprofit. So I just would ask, is there a reason we didn't open the door wider, or is just this past practice, and so we're complying with past practice for all these individual requests?
That's it exactly, Senator.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further comments from committee members, no one else in the room wishing to testify, public testimony is closed. We're going to set this bill aside, and our next meeting is April 4th. There will be no meeting Thursday the 30th, as where there's other business to attend to, and having no further business, we're going to adjourn at 4:35 p.m., and thanks everyone for coming. Good job.